Hi, today is February 27th, 2016, and this is MobiView's podcast number 151. I'm Todd Ogasawa, my good friend John Westfall, and I want to thank Frank McPherson for coming in last week to celebrate podcast 150 with us, especially since I was sick and pretty much useless in the conversation. So John and Frank really carried on
while I was... You seemed much more useful than you think.
While I was coughing with the mute button on for the vast majority of the podcast. Any case, today I've got a confusing item I wanted to discuss with John. So John is the proud owner of an iPad Pro.
And every other iPad.
And yeah. The last iPad I bought was the iPad Mini 4 because Apple didn't introduce a new iPad Air 3. I know I can't afford an iPad Pro, not being independently wealthy like John.
And it's that big education money, you know.
and B, I thought it was literally too big for me to carry around. And John has a very different use case than I do.
Yeah.
But in any case, I'm very happy with the iPad Mini 4. It turns out that, you know, like the original iPad, which I bought, I really enjoy the form factor and I have no complaints. But 9to5 Mac continues to say that the next Apple announcement, which is 2 weeks away, Ides of March, I think, is going to be a new 9.7-inch iPad. In other words, a standard-sized iPad, the original iPad screen size. And it is not going to be called the iPad Air. It is going to be called iPad Pro. Huh?
Yeah, I don't get that either. Some of the times the rumor mill catches it, and I think if this is true, we're getting about half of the information that we actually need. It seems like, obviously, Apple is not going to release two products with exactly the same name, unless they really do want to push that the iPad will eventually replace the MacBook, or, you know, eventually we'll all be using tablets instead of computers. Because, yes, there is a 13-inch MacBook and a 15-inch MacBook, and there used to be a 17-inch MacBook, but I don't think it's around anymore.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I guess I could see if you really do believe that, but I just don't think we're quite there yet. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see two iPad Pros, and one is, the iPad Pro. What did Apple used to like to call things that were bigger? There was a
Pro.
Pro got most of the time, yeah.
Yeah. But
it wouldn't surprise me if we do something. Maybe it'll become the iPad Pro, the iPad
Amateur?
The iPad Amateur. If you're not quite ready for the Pro yet, you'll be able to do that.
Right. Or, you know, maybe the iPad. Well, we'll figure this out. But I guess I'm easily confused by brand names because, you know, we've been following Microsoft so long and their brand names are just impossible to
figure out. Yeah, they just are horrible.
They could call it the iPad Pro 9.7-inch edition 2016
edition. Yeah, well, then that would be if they hired someone from Microsoft.
Yeah, it could be. It could be.
It could also be the iPad Pro 9 and the iPad Pro 12, but I really doubt they're going to messy their naming scheme up with numbers. But.
Yeah.
More numbers, two or three.
Yeah, well, they've done weird things before. Like, remember when they renamed the iPad the iPad? It was a new iPad, remember?
Well, when it was just the new iPad versus the,
followed the iPad 2, I think, right? It was iPad, iPad 2, and then the new iPad.
Yeah, the new iPad.
So they've made some interesting branding blunders, but we'll see.
That's true. I think we're getting half of the information. I don't think we're getting the whole story just yet.
Yeah. Now, an item I do find interesting, although it's one of those interesting things I'll probably never use, and that's Google Docs on the desktop. I really haven't checked if it's gone to their mobile side yet. Well, Google Docs, Google's Word-type web-based system, has added voice editing last year, or voice typing, I should say. It added voice typing last year where, it's basically speech to text. And I say basically with awe, because I think it's still amazing. We can say words and it more or less figures out what we're saying, especially when I speak. But they added voice editing and formatting to its voice typing feature this week, which was announced in the Google Docs blog. And I found that just great. I mean, you know, I bet Nuance is going, oh no. As you know, they unless they contributed to that, I mean, we really don't know. But it used to be hundreds of dollars. I think it was $200 to buy Dragon Dictation, for example. They had several editions. I think that was the professional edition or whatever. And you had to train it and all this. So I haven't tried the voice editing feature since my voice is so shot. I'm not sure it would even understand voice typing, let alone voice editing. And quite honestly, you know, I am not one of those people who can dictate. I know some people need to because of, you know, physical restrictions or whatever. You know, difficulty in typing as we get older and a little bit more arthritic. You know, that, I guess, affects a lot of us. But I just, because I say us so much, that's the other problem. I have so many interstitials in my speech that I don't really think clearly and fluidly enough to dictate. I've tried writing articles with speech to text, but I don't know. How about you, John?
Yeah, I've had kind of the same experience with speech to text. I like the idea of it, and I honestly do think that eventually we'll get to the point where speech becomes a more regular part of our, I suppose, repertoire with interacting with computers. In fact, I've had a lot of conversations the last few weeks about this with one of my classes, because I'm teaching human factors engineering this mm-hmm. semester. So we've been talking a lot about, you know, proper display of information and interaction. And, you know, this week was, you know, psychomotor control and what can people do and what, you know, reaction time and all that. So we've had a lot of conversations about how would speech be a good thing, a bad thing, talking about Siri and Cortana and Alexa and Google Now, because Google doesn't want to give theirs a name for some reason.
They're afraid. They, internally, I believe it's called Skynet, but...
Yeah, that's what I think. That's always been your assertion. So that might be the name that eventually gets released to the public. But so I just don't think this is necessarily there yet. I have started trying to use voice dictation a little more on my iPhone when it seems like it would make sense. So when I'm running from one meeting to another and I just want to send a quick text message and I don't want to stop in a hallway and tap it out, I want to just keep walking. So that seems like that's something that's a better use case than any other for speech to text. And I've tried talking to Siri more in my car, but here's the weird thing about Siri and the Apple Watch, which I don't think anyone has ever talked about, but I have this unique problem. When I'm outside of both my work and my home, I'm still connected to my home Wi-Fi very faintly. So most of the time I get into my car, if I say, "Hey Siri, play blah, blah, blah playlist," or whatever,
right,
I get this like back and forth because it's trying to do the Siri request over Wi-Fi. That's right. Failing. And, you know, by the time it gets figured out, I'm already halfway to work. So that's one little issue that I think Apple's still kind of working the bugs out of with Siri.
Okay, and before people start thinking it's taking Siri half an hour to figure things out, when you're halfway to work, how long has this been at this point?
About a minute and a half.
Okay.
It takes you about 3 minutes to drive from my home to my work.
Okay, so. Just so we clarify that for folks who think, man, Siri's really slow.
it's interesting to me that on my drive to work, there's probably only about 2 out of the 3 minutes that I'm not within conceivable range of a Wi-Fi access point that I could connect to. So,
I want to say something about Siri, because it's really been bugging me for the last, I don't know, since iOS 9, I would say. When I first got my iPhone 6 Plus, which was, a year and a half ago now, when it came out in 2014, Siri worked pretty good in the car. I would, you know, I plug it in so it's powered and I can say, hey, the name. Hopefully I'm not setting it off for people. But
Siri!
Okay, I would say that. And it would respond. Now, it wouldn't always understand me or understand what I was asking of it. But it would respond. Lately, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, we were actually talking about this in class and talking about the issue that Apple's running into now that everything that when it's connected to power, you could have Hey Siri active right all the time. And the rumor this week that we don't have on our show notes, but a new rumor is that Siri will be coming to macOS with the new operating system this fall. And that would be, Hey Siri would work as soon as your Mac is on power. And most of our Macs are always on power. So I would basically...
Uh-oh. All right, I just lost John. I'm going to see what's happening. Okay, and we are back from our little technical difficulty.
Which was completely my fault, so I will take ownership for that.
Yeah, when we last but left
I
off...
I won't tell you why, I'll just take ownership for it.
When we last left off about 10 seconds ago, from the listener's point of view, I hope, and I was saying, hey, where'd John go? We're talking about my ranting and raving about Siri not responding to me while I'm driving anymore. And it used to work fine. You know, I used to say, Siri, pause, or, you know, play this, or dial this if I'm going to pick up my wife at the airport or something. And it would generally cooperate. Sometimes it would not understand my Hawaiian accent or whatever, but otherwise it seemed perfectly happy with what I was saying. But since iOS 9.0, it's been useless. It doesn't even wake up half the time when I'm driving. And yeah, nothing Siri else has changed except iOS.
Siri just doesn't like you. Yeah, I think, so my whole point that I was making in a very long-winded way was saying that because Siri is now always listening in certain cases, I think Apple's trying to make sure that Siri only listens to you and doesn't listen to annoying podcast hosts like me yelling, hey, Siri.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, Google Skynet. So if it thinks that you are saying, okay, you know who, okay, Skynet, especially, and I have the Moto 360 on, on my wrist, it anything that even vaguely sounds like okay, Skynet, wakes it up, and then for whatever reason, it starts voice recording. So many a time, people are talking about things on a podcast, and I'll happen to notice my wrist is lit up, because, you know, normally the Moto 360 is dark, unless, you know, it's doing something, and it's recording word for word what the podcast is saying. Whichever podcast I'm listening to.
This is a great way to get your podcast in more ears, is to set it up so that Google just automatically records it.
And that's kind of, so it's a little bit too sensitive in the car. And I should say, although Amazon's Echo is not available for the car yet, and someday when it is, it's going to be awesome, I think. You'll need to be tethered to your phone or something to get things, but its array of microphones, it is fantastic. So if some other speaker is playing, so for example, if you have a television playing, Echo can get as confused as anything else because it does. But if it is playing sound from its own speaker, it uses, you know, some kind of noise cancellation or whatever on itself, so that even if you are playing a podcast or music or whatever, and you use the keyword to wake up the Echo, it... And I'm trying not to, because people listening are at home, their Echo might be right next to them. It will pause whatever it's doing and listen to what you're saying and try to carry out the commands. It is fantastic. Still love my Amazon Echo. And no, they're not we don't have any sponsors, but tip, if you want to be one, please contact us.
We really need to get sponsors. Yeah, we do. You know, if anyone would like to buy our opinions,
that's please, right.
Just let us know.
We're cheap.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. You know, we have the Save the Todd and also the parallel Save the John foundations.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the Make John and Todd Great Again.
That's right.
You know, to use a political sort of maxim.
That's right.
Make us great again by funding us, and we will definitely, definitely say whatever you like. So if
we're a lot like politicians, in other words.
Yes. So if next week we start talking about how Windows Phone is really going to be in everyone's hands by 2017.
Well, that's what Gartner Group said.
Yes. Then you'll know who our new sponsor is.
Hey, Gartner Group, if you want to sponsor us, we even though it's not, even though the Windows Phone now has, I think, 1% of market share instead of 15% you predicted.
We will thoroughly turn on our reality distortion fields, and we will create whatever you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, Tizen, you know, if you need some little pumping up there.
Oh, yeah.
What happened up Tizen, but at any rate. Okay, so Siri, thumbs down. Google Skynet, it's actually working okay when I use it on my phone or my watch. And Amazon Echo, big thumbs up. It is awesome. I really haven't used Cortana much because half the time it doesn't turn on my tablet.
I have nothing that
and
can
And you don't
use
run Windows 10, so
yeah. There's nothing I can do with Cortana.
Yeah. Okay, so, oh, actually, I was going to mention, we'll save the OS thing for the next one. So one of the things I wanted to mention is there was an article in, oh gosh, I can't remember who actually published it now. But there was an interesting article I ran into, and then I referenced it myself in an article I wrote in extremetech.com earlier this week about Avast, you know, the security firm. They do the free and paid antivirus, anti-malware software. So they did something a little roguish, I guess. And I use that as a pun. They set up a rogue hotspot in the Barcelona airport where apparently checked into the Mobile World Congress. I thought it was kind of interesting that you could check into a conference at the airport rather than, you know, having to go to the hotel or whatever, a conference center. And they set up a couple, I think three rogue hotspots with various names, like Starbucks, to make you think that it's something familiar. And they found over 2,000 people used the access point without really, you know, vetting it to make sure. Because, by the way, if you are at a Starbucks restaurant, coffee shop, their Wi-Fi SSID is Google Starbucks, since it's run by Google. Mm-hmm. If you just see Starbucks, that isn't it. But anyway, several thousand, over 2,000 people used it, and they were using Google, and a couple of people were using Tinder and some other dating app. As soon as they landed, which I thought was kind of interesting, so. It was 1%, so it was, you know, like 20-some-odd people. But it's still a significant number. It's more than one. I found it interesting, you know, assuming that these people are all technically knowledgeable and savvy people, that they wouldn't vet a system for the long... I mean, I have my mobile devices set to look for Wi-Fi hotspots that may be available, but, you know, then I try to check it out and make sure that the SSID looks okay and... You know, that sort of thing, or it's what I expect. Usually you know what the airport's free Wi-Fi or paid Wi-Fi is. So I don't know. What did you think about this, John, as a psychologist?
Well, I haven't followed it too closely. I'm curious how many people connected and used a VPN immediately after connecting.
They didn't report that.
Yeah, that is one thing I would do if I was, connecting to a rogue hotspot. Would figure, well, if it's free internet, as long as I'm on a VPN,
yeah,
you know, I'm not going to use their DNS, so I'm not going to have to worry about DNS poisoning. I'm going to tunnel everything over my own connection. Yeah. So that's one thing that we don't know. This is just social engineering at its finest. You know, you've got a group of people who, by and large, probably don't have a data plan in Europe. And so they're coming over and they're going, I need some data. Where can I get data quickly? Hey, here's a free open hotspot from the Starbucks. And, it's a little different than usual, but maybe Starbucks over here don't say Google Starbucks. Yeah. Maybe they just say Starbucks. So, sure, I'll try this out. It's social engineering.
I agree. I mean, I don't disagree with you saying. I'm just surprised that people who go to Mobile World Congress, and maybe, you know, there are, it's a huge conference, right? It's like 100,000. So maybe, you know, we're talking small single-digit percentage.
We don't know the N that didn't connect, you know, and so that's all that we know is how many did. So we don't know how many people looked at it and said, what's this crazy access point? I'm not connecting to this.
It's too bad we don't have more demographic data, you know, aside from the number of people connected to Tinder and other dating apps.
That's true.
Because then, you know, if we could get age, gender, you know, it'd be interesting. Country of origin, it'd be interesting to see if there are any kinds of demographics we could generate from this about who's most likely to do this.
Well, now you're channeling your psychology background. So eventually, we'll get you back into psychology.
Which reminds me, it's not on our show notes, but it's a super old story. Many, many years ago, when I worked for a very large company with about 160,000 employees, somebody accidentally, and IT allowed it back then, somebody sent it a message to send all 180,000 people. And it was kind of an announcement of a grandchild kind of thing. It wasn't anything terribly bad. But then people started responding, saying, don't send email to all. Of course, they're replying to all, so... In any case, after a couple of hundred people did this, IT still hadn't shut this down, by the way, at this point. But having hundreds of people send all to 180,000 people, turns out that will shut down your email system.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So that was lots of fun, and not exactly social engineering, but it was the punchline for the story is, after this, I collected all of these emails, of course, and I identified which area each one of them was sent from, and I, how can I put this politically correctly? I identified which region of the world is most likely to reply to all, and there was a definite region. I would say the U.S., actually. It was a U.S.-based company, although we did that international. But it was mostly a U.S.-based company. The most 180,000 people were in the U.S. And I identified the state, which I will not say on this podcast, which sent the most reply to all. It wasn't my state, by the way. Plus, we're too small. We're too small.
Yes.
Okay, so a vast, interesting experiment. I do note in my article on Extreme Tech that years ago, this was unintentionally carried out by Microsoft. As you might recall, John, remember free public Wi-Fi?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so if you don't remember the free public Wi-Fi SSID virus, and I use that in quotes, it wasn't a real virus, go read my extremetech.com article, and you'll find out what this was back in around 2010, I think. Okay, the second article I wrote this week for Extreme Tech, I usually only do one a week, but I did two this week, is about a kind of an interesting Linux variant. And John, I know you're a Linux hack, so you might find this interesting. It's
with a Raspberry Pi in my hands.
Oh, which one did you get? Yes. Is that the original?
Oh, this is the original Pi. Okay. I just dug it out last night and was playing with it a little bit.
I have something to say about Pi, although it's not on our show notes either. But so there's a company for the last couple of years has been working on this thing called Subgraph OS. They recently got funding from actually a government organization. Open software something, which is oddly enough part of Radio Free Asia, which is funded by the U.S. Congress. But anyway, it's a Subgraph OS is a secure Linux for the non-technical user. And John, I don't know if you've had to ever, you probably have, but you've ever had to configure the SE Linux kernel mods on Red Hat or whatever.
It is
a giant pain.
I've had the love of disabling SE Linux many times because configuring it is not something that I tend to want to do, and thankfully most of the time I'm dealing with it, it's not on a production machine.
Yeah. I've had to do it on production machines. I am not an SE Linux expert, and I had to scratch my head and run through the documentation and make a call or two, and it is not fun. So if the Subgraph OS people have got this nailed, it's going to be interesting. It is in very early release. I think it's maybe like alpha. The source code is on GitHub. After I wrote the article, because, you know, I didn't actually contact the people. I could have, but I was too lazy. I just wanted to, there was enough information in the net that I could write about it. And it was interesting enough. Nothing bad to say about them. So there was nothing they needed to, respond to. But at any rate, I did get contacted by I think, one of the co-founders of a very small group. I think there are four people or so, and who says that ISOs are available for testing, actually. So, when we run it in a VM, it's there. I'm looking forward to this, since we were just talking about the vast experiment.
Yeah.
This is the sort of thing.
Anything that brings security to more people, I am in favor of.
Now, I've asked you this before, and of course, my aging brain forgot what you told me. Which VPN? Do you have your own VPN set up, or do you use a service?
Most of the time, I use Private Internet Access, the VPN service that I use. I like them just because they've been more established. They will let you, if you would like to be very paranoid, be very paranoid. So, for example, they don't keep logs of anything.
Yeah.
They also will allow you to pay through a gift card. So if you go out and just say, I don't want even a record that I bought this service, right. You could buy a gift card. I believe they accept a bunch of different ones, and then just send them the information. And, you could buy the gift card with cash and then send them the information, and they'll take that. So they are very interested in that sort of secure and paranoid realm, how paranoid you want to be. I also have a couple of other VPNs that are just, SSH proxies that I can connect to. So I have a few virtual private servers that I jump through occasionally, and a couple of production servers that I have admin access to that I jump through occasionally. So occasionally I will just route all over the place just to make sure that whatever I'm doing, even though I don't do anything all that interesting, if I'm on a public Wi-Fi or something like that, I don't have to worry.
Now, I actually referenced private internet access in my article. I don't use them myself, but they're one of two VPN services that another writer at Extreme Tech recommended, so I mentioned them. They're pretty inexpensive, as I recall. They're a couple dollars a month, maybe?
They are. I don't want to say what their pricing is without knowing, so yeah. I'll pull them up real quick here. But they've been around also. They were one of the first VPN services that really made its, name on the fact that they were going to be as secure as possible. So they are for 6 months. It's $35.95, but really you want to go with the yearly. The yearly is $39.95.
Wow. That's very reasonable.
And you can redeem they sell gift cards, but I'm trying to find where they actually let you pay with weird stuff.
Yeah. But it sounds like if you are the kind of person who travels a lot or basically away from your home or office environment a lot, this is a very reasonably priced service to consider.
Yes, and they also will. They also have a very nice iOS app that will install the VPN configuration onto your iPhone, so that you don't have to deal with that. All you know is your username and password that they assign you, and your username is, you know, a series of random letters and numbers, and your password is the same. So you don't even have to worry about someone knowing what your username is.
Cool. That is very cool. Okay.
Yeah, you can pay. Here's the thing. I forgot. I didn't even see it. It was right in front of me. You can pay anonymously with Starbucks cards, Target cards, Walmart, and hundreds of other gift cards accepted. So if you really, really want no one to know, you can use a $25 Starbucks gift card for 100 days of access, a $50 Walmart card for a year. So you're paying a little more, but you can select. They have an exhaustive list of gift cards they will accept.
Fox Mulder would approve.
Exactly. Yeah. And they even accept the Omaha Steaks gift card. So if someone got you Omaha Steaks and you don't want the meat but you want internet access, you got it.
Okie dokie. Next two things I wanted to mention. Both are related to rants I've had in the past. So item number one is I recently bought a Scotty Vest camp shirt, which is a short sleeve, warm weather shirt, which I'm actually going to use to travel to the UK when it's cold.
Cold weather climate.
Yeah, but you know, I'm not the smartest traveler in the world, but I figure with a jacket or a hoodie, you know, on the plane, I'll be fine. And I've got a heavy jacket once I get to the UK, but in any case, in the past, I've complained about, especially Aloha shirts in Hawaii, which have very shallow pockets compared to other kinds of shirts you find elsewhere. For whatever reason, I don't know why the shirts are normal size, but the pockets are sub-sized, in my opinion.
Shallow pockets for not shallow people.
I guess so. And the gist of it is, though, that the iPhone 6 Plus or any other phablet-sized phone basically sticks out way too far and can fall out when you're washing your hands or whatever. And in fact, my Nexus 6 with its armored case doesn't even fit in the pocket because it's not even wide enough. So I'm happy to say that the Scotty Vest camp shirt, which I got on sale a couple of weeks ago, not only can fit both either, you know, a phablet-type phone in. Actually, it has two chest pockets, breast pockets, so I can fit both phones in my shirt. And the magnetic clasp on the top locks it in, so you know, you're washing your hands, it won't fall out in the basin or whatever. So if you're looking for a shirt that can fit your big honking phone, I would recommend this if you're in a warm weather or getting ready for warm weather. Scott, and again, no sponsors. Hey, Scotty Vest, you know, we're open to sponsors. but I will say I paid for it in cash money for it, as they say. And very, very happy with it so far. Tried it out yesterday in Hawaii where it was about 80 degrees. And it was very comfortable in this kind of weather, and you know, which we consider cool, by the way. You know, it's kind of in a 70s to low 80s. No complaints. And it fit my phone, so I was really happy to have not my phone not stick out while I'm wandering around. I still need to write my letter, my very polite letter to some of my favorite Aloha shirt manufacturers, saying I need deeper pockets, and other people do too, because I'm sure other guys have this same problem with these larger phones.
Oh yeah, most likely.
How do you carry your phone? Do you carry it in your pants pocket or?
Yeah, usually in my pants pocket is where my phone lives. Especially since, as we'll talk about in a minute, I have a new phone accessory that we'll hit after you talk about your new accessory.
Yeah, my other rant.
Yes.
So several months ago, in fact, last August, basically my Microsoft Universal Keyboard, which was only 6 months old at the time, started failing. So let me rephrase that. Started malfunctioning, not failing. It still works. It still charges up. You press most of the keys and it still works, with exception of T, as in the first letter of my name, and the shift key.
That hasn't been a problem for you at all, has it?
And the shift key, so I can't have any capital letters. So, you know, if I were E.B. White, it was E.B. White who did all lowercase? I can never remember. But whoever that famous author was, I can't remember, who wrote in all lowercase, that would be okay, but you would have to not use the T letter. So if you wrote everything except, you had to use words that did not have the letter T. So no thes, this, that's, thens. It'd be a challenge. This is a writing challenge for you, John. Write a story with no capitalization, which is not hard. You can have punctuation, but no T's. I think you may recall that one of Dr. Seuss's challenges, I think for Green Eggs and Ham, was to only limit himself to 40 words or something. That was a challenge from his editor.
The best example of writing challenge that I learned about in recent years is a book called Eunoia that came out in 2001. Have you heard of this book?
No, not at all. Go ahead.
Every chapter is written using words limited to a single vowel.
What?
So the first chapter is all A's. The first chapter is all A's. The second chapter is all E's. So as Wikipedia points out, this produces sentences like, Hassan can, at a hand clap, call a vassal at hand and ask that all staff plan a bacchanal. So when thinking about writing exercises, each of the main section of the book consists of five chapters, A, E, I, O, and U. And then there are other chapters in it that I believe do other that have other elements of it. But I have the book. It's interesting to read. It's very lyrical to read.
Okay. And I need to top this off by saying, so I can't even get Microsoft to tell me, and I called them. I called Microsoft's, hardware support, but product support, saying, is this thing still under warranty or not? I can't find the little paper that came with it. And they won't even answer me. I can tell them when I bought it because I bought it from Amazon. And
the answer
won't...
is no. Yeah. Whatever you're asking, the answer is no.
And I can't get any tech support, right? So I say, I can tell you when I bought it. I can tell you where I bought it from. I have a record of it from Amazon. I just don't have a little piece of paper. And your website doesn't say how long its warranty period. Is it 6 months, a year, is it whatever? And they won't do any warranty work on it. They won't repair it or replace it. Anyway, no more Microsoft keyboards for me.
So Todd is basically asking, can you give me anything for this? Can I do this? Can I do that? Can I pay you money? Can I do whatever? And the answer is just no.
Yeah, can I take it to the Microsoft store? Actually, I went to the Microsoft store without the keyboard. I just happened to be passing by one day. And I said, can I bring this in? And they were like, they weren't very useful either. It is very different confused. From an Apple experience, let me tell you.
You pay a little more, but you might actually get treated a little nicer. So.
Actually, this is the same price as an Apple wireless keyboard. I think it's $69.
Okay. So we can't even give Microsoft benefit of the doubt on that one.
The old wireless, I think the new wireless keyboard is way more expensive. But the old, which was, $69, $79. So, yeah, very disappointing. In any case, to make a long story short, what I did is I paid $32, which is, I think, less than half the price of this thing. And I bought a thing called iClever Portable Bluetooth Keyboard from Amazon. It is exactly the same width as the Microsoft keyboard, and its keys, I'm looking at it right now, its keys actually looks a little bigger. The enter key is definitely bigger. The shift key is smaller, but the arrow keys are larger and in the normal position. Microsoft arrow keys are in a rectangle versus the upside down T formation that most of us are used to. Mm-hmm. iClever keyboards, arrow keys are in the upside down T formation, which, you know, our fingers know how to use. So it's really cool. And also, although it's the same width, it's a folding keyboard, so it's no larger than my phone. Very easy to carry. It's I'm really glad I picked it up. I'm taking a trip in April, and I'm definitely going to be using it. So I'm not. I don't carry notebooks. I haven't carried notebooks in years. So iClever Bluetooth keyboard from Amazon. I'll put a link on the show notes. And full disclosure, I'm going to have my Amazon tag on it, which I've not used in years. So if anybody actually clicks on it and buys it, I get like 5 cents. So, you know, that's part of the Save the Todd Foundation.
Yes. And if we could figure it out, I would put my Amazon tag on it too, and then you could get 2.5 cents, and I could get 2.5 cents. And yeah, it'll really work out well for us.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a whatever credit check, however Amazon pays in years, so I don't know if this works.
I don't think I've ever gotten one, so that's even better.
I actually made a couple $100 from them over, you know, over all time, so
nice.
But that hasn't been true for many, many years. I don't think I've gotten anything in years.
Well, that is your new toy. I will mention what I got this week. So okay. One of the things I'm always trying to do is limit what I carry. And, you know, for years now it's been wallet, phone, keys, yep, et cetera. So I have a bag that, of course, I take to work with me that's got the iPad and all that in it. But right. When I go out, wallet, phone, and keys. And I've been very interested in wallet cases for my phone so that I can, you know, reduce that to two things. And I've had the 12 South book case, which I really love, but, you know, it covers the front of the screen, and sometimes it's a little bulkier than I want.
Right.
And about 2 years ago, I discovered EYN cases, EYN, which stands for Everything You Need. This company was started by a woman who wanted a case that basically had everything she needed in it. It looks like a regular sleeve case that you put your phone in. So, but the back of it is a clamshell. So it opens up, and on the back, you have a clip that can hold documents, cards, money, whatever you need. And then there's a mirror on the other side of it because this is geared mostly toward the female market, but you could also use it if you are not female, as I am not. Yeah. It comes in 4 colors, white, black, blue, and purple. And it's got kind of a rubberish texture to it. And it retails for about
$29.99. Yeah, it's very reasonable. Also, I'm looking at a photo of it now from a link you sent, EYNproducts.com. And it looks like it also is a stand, a kickstand.
Yeah, you can use it as a kickstand, and it has a little lanyard loop.
Yeah, so that's very handy.
A lanyard, so you can throw it in your pocket and then fish it out with the lanyard. But for me, the thing that really matters is it can hold. Right now, I have cash. I have a couple of bills in there. I have a couple of business cards, and I have 4 full-size credit cards.
Right.
So that's a little more than most of these cases can hold. Most are limited. When they say 3 cards, they mean 3 cards.
Yeah.
Mine, I'm able to get everything that was on my Slim Clip wallet into this case.
Right. I should note, I'm looking at the website. It is only for the iPhone 6 Plus and 6S Plus. It says it does not fit the iPhone 6 or presumably 6S.
Ah, but if you go to the rest of their website, I believe they do have...
Oh, they have another version. Okay, got
one,
it.
Yeah, they do have one for the iPhone 6. They actually have
a number of
different cases.
Got it. They instead of getting you all confused and having to pick a size, you just go to the right one and order.
So there is actually one for the iPhone 4 and 4S, 5 and 5S, 5C, 6, 6 got Plus, it. 6S Plus... And then they also have some NCAA cases, nice. Different logos, cases. NFL cases.
Yeah.
They've got a little bit of everything.
No
on
curling team cases? No, sorry. Curling.
Not that I can see. Oh, they also have one for the Samsung Galaxy S4.
So, by the way, it looks very much like a conventional case. You wouldn't think it's a wallet type case. It doesn't shout out, hey, I have other valuable stuff in here.
No, and it looks just about the same as you would find. Any other case the size. I mean, it looks about the size of a OtterBox when it's all put together, except most of the back is just this clamshell. So you're giving up a little bit of protection for some more storage.
Right. One comment, one question. The comment is that before we started a podcast, he mentioned to me something about its earphone jack or headphone jack.
Yeah, so the way this phone works, or the way the case works, is you take off a little bottom piece and you slide your phone up into it, and then you put the bottom piece mm-hmm. back on. Mm-hmm. At work, I often play music off of my phone, and unfortunately, most of the headphone jacks that I plug into my phone are a little bit too big for this little bottom piece. So that means what I do at work is I simply take the bottom piece off, put it in my pocket, plug in, and then at the end of class, just unplug it, pull out the bottom piece, and slip it back on. So you don't have to take the phone completely out, but it is a little bit of an annoyance. It'd be nice if that wasn't an issue, but yeah. The design of the case really kind of forces that to be an issue. So.
Right. And my question is, did you buy it directly from this website, or did you buy it from Amazon or some other retailer?
I bought it off Amazon, I believe. Maybe I got it for $24, $26, uh-huh. something like that.
Nice. Nice. You know, I asked all these questions because I was just, except for that headphone thing, which bothers me, since I'm going to be in an airplane for, I think, 20 hours. And I won't, you're not supposed to use a Bluetooth headset in a plane, I think. Although I'm not sure, since they allow Wi-Fi now. But I don't know if I want to use Bluetooth on a
plane. Well, you could, and as I mentioned, the earbuds that you get from Apple fit yeah. just fine.
Okay. It's the other ones that are thicker.
The bigger, thicker connectors, or the yeah. L-shaped connectors.
Right, and I have to check, you know, next week I'm going to be talking about an active noise cancellation headset, and I haven't opened it yet, that I'm using on the trip.
But even if you were to pull off this bottom piece,
yeah.
and then just keep the, I mean, the phone will not come out with the bottom piece off of it. It's held in enough by friction, so you wouldn't have to worry so much about, you know, the phone slipping out, even if you had to pull the bottom piece yeah. off.
But you know how, well, you know how graceful I am, and... my concern is that should I buy something like that that requires me to remove a small piece while traveling in an airplane,
yes.
then I might not be able to put it. I'm going to lose it, basically.
You know, being well, you know what? It's got a little. It's technically got something you could connect a little piece of string to. So you could always yeah. just, you know, tie a piece of string there and tie yeah. it to yourself.
And the reason I'm so interested, I really like the lanyard. You know, one of the problems with modern phones, old phones, used to have a little slot. That mostly for young children, that lets you stick a lanyard or, you know, more decorative kind of things. Like my daughter used to put in little, I don't know what you call it, little like almost bracelet looking doodads in when she was young, to decorate her phone. Now people put it in the headset, which is totally ridiculous to me. That uses up that slot. But at any rate, you could also put a lanyard thing in, and you could securely hold your phone. And for me, that's important because, although I'm going to be carrying a real camera with me, a lot of times I take in photos or little videos with my phone. And, you know, if you're sticking your head out over, you know, a cliff or building, side of a building, I don't want to drop my phone. But with a lanyard on, you know, you can kind of wrap it around your wrist and secure it and safely take those kind of photos. But anyhow.
Yeah. Well, that is a good option. I've yeah. been happy with it. I've used it full-time for 3-4 days now.
Nice.
And I did have the one for the 5 when I had an iPhone 5 and enjoyed that.
All right, so eynproducts.com. John got it from
Amazon.
And if John can find his thing, we'll link it with his Amazon tag. He'll get 5 cents if you buy
it. Then that is definitely, I'm looking that up right now because we're gonna have a little competition. See
yeah.
how many people buy from your
That's right.
device and how many buy from mine.
That's right.
And
or even if this still works, you know, I don't even know if the Amazon whatever program is still around.
Well, you know, it is, and actually if you signed up for it, there's actually a real easy way to get a link with your own associate's ID. They're actually at the top of every Amazon page.
Yeah, that's what it was called, Amazon Associates, right. Yeah. I just haven't gotten a payment from this, you know, and I don't use their link very often, so. But in any case, we'll find out if anybody actually is. Okay, so a couple items, Scotty Vest camp shirt. Scotty Vest, hello.
You know, years ago, I used to review their stuff quite regularly for Pocket PC Thoughts and Phone Thoughts. And yeah. I still have a lot of Scotty Vest stuff from my review days that I did not get rid of. I still use it regularly.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I've got a couple of shirts and things. Yeah.
The jacket I wear regularly is a Scotty Vest Tactical 4.0 from years ago that I paid for out of my own pocket because I just wanted that set. I was actually just looking at the 8.0 that's on their website.
Well, giving them more free advertisement. You know, I for a long time, I couldn't really buy anything from them because they were mostly cool and cold weather kind of clothing. But they did come out with a couple of t-shirt type things for warm weather that I bought. I think I bought two of those. I do have a hoodie that, if you may recall, we all kind of did a group purchase of a
Logwood
hoodie. Which, you know, is totally useless in Hawaii, but it was useful when I used to visit with you guys in Washington back when we used to go up there every year. And now I've got a heavy jacket that I'm going to use once in my life. And never use again, but oh well. It's a nice jacket. You know, look
we'll
at it
get you to later. Travel more, and you can use it other places.
All righty, so a bunch of things. John had a good time. I hope I muted enough times to hide my cough. Sorry about the little technical difficulty we had. Mobile Views 151 is in the can. Thank you. We will talk to you next time.